Here can be observed the Jewish fatal flaw, or rather the Aryan, having sympathy and regard for others which causes temporary harm and setback but eventually, through karmic processes, results in a greater good through self-sacrifice, through giving without expectation of reward. Of course, the Jewish inversion of ethics here entails their characteristic behavior of bestowing false gifts upon others even as they harm their enemies. Luke's friends Leia, Han Solo and Chewbacca are captured and set up by a Negro erstwhile friend of Solo's, Lando Calrissian, who betrays them to the Empire, who have coordinated a setup to entrap the messianic figure Luke. Here one can observe the Jewish stigmatization of the Negro as an untrustworthy traitor and self-server, siding with anyone for anything his momentary self-interest dictates and being a backslider. The Negro, however, is portrayed as coming around and turning on the Empire out of sympathy for his friends, a recognition after the fact, however dim, of his moral transgression. Luke confronts his father and martyrizes himself, allowing himself to fall in the most literal sense from the heights of temporal power into a higher state of spiritual authority by taking the straight and narrow path, allowing his hands to be cut off by his father, sacrificing himself to himself and thereby demonstrating in that gesture his self-transcendent nature and spiritual authority, the quality the Jew claims for himself as a gesture of his putative supremacy over the worldly empire of the black magicians, winning by losing. Of course, one need only observe who controls the power systems of this world to understand the inverted nature of this claim, which portrays the temporal power of whites as evil and that of jury, of the MORG as good. The final episode of the trilogy, The Return of the Jedi, showcases the final confrontation between the Children of Light and the Children of Darkness, again in their inverted portrayal and as an act of black magic on the part of Lucas. One might draw conclusions regarding the scenery and come to an understanding of the cosmic war as it culminates on this earth as of this time, thus taking us up to the present epoch of the Kali Yuga and serving as a revelation of the method of Jury in their intended plans, the ultimate defeat of their enemy, the Empire of the Aryan race, who had found a safe space on Gaia to avoid the pursuit of the real Empire of the Dark Forces, the Reptilians and their Jewish underlings. The Death Star is being reconstructed and is nearly fully operational. This may refer to the artificial moon, which constitutes a part of the Moon Saturn matrix machine, which traps the souls of the dead on Earth and perpetuates the reincarnation trap of the Dark Forces, again in verdict and portrayed as the sinister plan of the Empire. According to some, the moon is actually the last bastion of the Dark Forces, who have been defeated in this solar system by the Devas, the ancestors of the Aryan race, the true Skywalkers and Luciferian legions of the galaxy, no longer so long ago or far away but here and now, and poised to work with the Aryans on the Earth to spiritualize Gaia and rid her of the pestilential miasma of the Dark Forces. The planet or moon Endor is one reminiscent of Earth, with a similarity of trees and atmosphere. Upon Endor, the Ewoks live and encounter the Rebels, who they initially have an antagonistic relationship with, but then the Rebels become deified as gods through the intervention of the droid C-3PO and Luke's usage of the Force. This may be an inverted portrayal of the Aryans' relationship to non-whites, who came to venerate the descendants of the Diviers as gods. Through the gift of their Aryan wisdom, the non-whites prospered and were content to play a subordinate role appropriate for their nature in accordance with the principal Suam Kike and the racially based caste system of Varnashramadharma. The disturbers of the Force, that Jews inserted themselves and orchestrated revolutions of the Spartacus variety, leading the naive non-whites against the Aryan elite, or, as in the case of the Americas and other regions of the world, leading the whiter Christians against the Aryan tribes who created civilizations in remote areas after the deluge and the fall of Atlantis. In the movie, Lucas inverts the historical reality of the Aryans and posits them in the place of the extraterrestrial invader seeking to enslave and exploit the innocent Ewoks. The actual events are otherwise, with the reptilian invaders seeking to continue their cosmic war on the Earth and presumably creating the Jews as their hybrid stock through mixing with the Neanderthal and subsequently the Aryan, through whom they built power and constructed empires to their overlords, such as under the Catholic Church and the Roman Empire before it. Prior to this, as the radioactivity of the Dead Sea bears witness to, as well as the ruins of the former Gobi Desert civilization, a war of nuclear proportions occurred on Gaia, which left the fallout of the cosmic war. The good Jews accordingly are depicted as playing the role of the altruistic, helping the Ewoks defend themselves against the aggressive exploitation of their homeland. Such a scene as a microcosmic smear against the colonialism of the white race, especially under the influence of Christianism, which, rather than serving itself the white race, simply served Jewry in their dominion mandate for global power. The altruism of Jewry wins the natives over to their side, just as is depicted in the Jew Dr. Seuss's book The Lorax, wherein the brown barbar loots are turned by the Lorax against the one seller, i.e. the Aryan exploiter. Luke meanwhile has gone voluntarily to confront his father, his shadow self, Darth Vader, which posits the dichotomy of sides of the cosmic war and their respective moralities, the Jew with his Magian morality and the Aryan and his Faustian or master morality, the forces of ostensible order, that of the entropy of the demiurge, and those of ostensible disorder or chaos, those of extropy, the will to power of the potential and actual God-man. The Aryan against the will to power of the Dark Lord and they who submit thereto in the name of peace, the distinction between the left-hand path and the right-hand path, between struggle against the time flow of Jehovah and the right-hand path of self-extinction. Skywalker becomes entangled in the dark side of the Force, portrayed as that of self-serving aggression against others, fighting the lesser jihad of overcoming an external opponent rather than the greater jihad of fighting his baser tendencies. He responds aggressively to the Emperor's attempt to provoke him by threatening to harm Luke's friends, and his strike against the Emperor is repelled by Vader, who, from the perspective of Lucas the director, demonstrates the karmic backlash of active aggression rather than the static passive aggression of the Jedi. Luke demonstrates his moral superiority according to these Magian mores and ceases to fight, preferring to die rather than go over to the dark side, martyrizing himself for good. His father prevents the Emperor from destroying Luke, and through the lens of George Lucas demonstrates a triumph of the Magian good over that of the Faustian values of Faustian man. Of course, the distinction lies in the hypocrisy of Magian morality and its self-deceptive nature, its desire to tear down and destroy through subterfuge and subterranean deviousness, and its concealing its female violence behind the mask of humanitarianism and other flowery-sounding terms, e.g., peace, love, equality, God, etc. The pretense of altruism is yet another mask that conceals the self-serving motivations and actions of the rebels, aka the Magian moralists, be they Christian, liberals, Jews, females or non-whites. The salvationism of the Magian consciousness and its moral expression is revealed in the messianic figure of Luke, who saves his Aryan father from the dark side of the Force, elusively demonstrating that the Aryan not only is given over to the dark side of the Force, but that only the Jew can redeem the evil Aryan from his sin. Such as a perspective of Jewry in any case, and Darth Vader's remains are cremated in the ancient Aryan mode of funereal rites, perversely inverting the values of the Aryan, as his stormtrooper legions have their helmets beaten on by the Ewoks in a vulgar, animalistic display of feral dominance over the powerful and strong Aryan, reminiscent of the aftermath of the Second World War and the butchery and torture of the Germans, who simply wished to defend themselves against the aggression of the Dark Forces. This is the conclusion of the trilogy and of this analysis, the trilogy of Jewish George Lucas being a vehicle of predictive programming of a dystopian future of triumphal Zion on Earth and of demoralization by way of passive-aggressive Magian morality, in addition to a defilement and perversion of the history of the cosmic war. That truth is stranger than fiction, however, will be borne out in the actual unfolding of the events of the cosmic war, with the Earth being recaptured by the Aryans and indeed liberated from the bondage of the Dark Forces and their matrix of slavery. Though devastation has befallen prior worlds owing to the influence of the Demiurge and his hordes of vampires, the Devas and Aryans still occupy positions of great power. Indeed, they have vanquished many of the forces of the bad side of the Force, the rebels against truth and justice, the Empire of Jehovah, the vampire empire of entropy and death. The future belongs to the Jedi Knights, who are the warriors of the last battalion of Christos, Lucifer Wotan, the Lord of the Earth. Predictive Programming in Jewish Pop Culture and Aryan Counterculture. The following treatise purports to be a diagnosis of the deeply rooted malaise of modernity which has been planted in the consciousness of Aryan man by the mind manipulator Jew through his monopoly of the media and mass acculturation system, the public fool system, what is conventionally referred to as public education, and especially the kosher culture industry of media and entertainment. This spiritual sickness is exacerbated through the Jewish influence and power over the collective consciousness of their intended slaves, and is only ameliorated slightly in terms of quantitative impact, of sheer volume, by the relatively feeble counterforce of Aryan power. The following treatise of examples from the pop culture of modernity of Babylon's Ion J. O.G., of the Jew world order and diagnoses the cancer and its necessary treatment. The title has been selected to inform the reader of the transgression and adherence to natural law, the former being what amounts to injustice and the latter the converse. These examples are taken from a period when the trail of the serpent had still to be concealed under the red carpet of love, peace, and unity, and various other surreptitious catchphrases which enabled the slumbering masses to continue their lives of tax serfdom and hedonistic indulgence under the cover of rational self-interest and a cryptic enlightened despotism orchestrated by the Judeo-freak Masonic elite and their underlings, the Christads, Leibtards, and Mammon worshippers, as well as their non-white anti-white slaves. The subtlety of the conspiracy worked, and still does to this day in spite of its dysfunctionality work, to gradualistic overcome the white majority through imperceptible undermining and eroding of its self-understanding, perverting its cultural tradition and historical sense, and substituting an unhealthy view of nature and natural law for a sick view based upon abstract ideas and their false associations of emotionality, of good feelings. Abstract ideas such as race mixing, sex perversions to confusion of identity based upon the most crude forms of human expression. This anarchist bomb thrown at the white carriage purports to destroy the host body wherein the white king resides. How it has worked so far is through the white masses and their king lighting off too many firecrackers supplied by the Jewish mind manipulators. A few windows have at this point been busted out of the carriage, alerting the white king to the danger of the incendiary multitude and their devil-may-care caprice instigated by the Jewish programming. Henceforth the subtle conspiracy seeks to conceal itself behind whatever fronts, blaming the masses themselves or a convenient scapegoat to detract attention from their own incendiary bombs. The new phase operates through a furtherance of the divide-and-conquer strategy, ramping up the dialectic of right-wing versus left-wing and thereby getting the white masses to fall upon one another, weakening themselves sufficiently for the kill the non-white invasion. At the time of the vehicles of propaganda treated of here, the conspiracy was operating in a more clandestine fashion and thus had to instill itself into the consciousness of the white majority through shaming techniques, guilt-tripping, blaming the victim, etc. The Simpsons. This portrayal of a white family unit served as a vehicle of the ethic of dysfunctionality that the Jewish mind manipulators had intended to uphold as the model of the anti-heroic fragmented family that they knew would undermine the power of Aryan man, as the nuclear family serves as the basis of all societal order, being a microcosm of the macrocosm of Leviathan. Thus to strike at the bedrock of society is to destroy the society and to render it susceptible of usurpation at the hands of those not so programmed with self-destruct conditioning. The pater familias has always been the support which the family unity has existed, and to destroy this figure in its natural form is to destroy the cohesion of the family and lead to its fragmentation and inevitable destruction, creating a chaotic and ruined posterity. Enter the figure of Homer Simpson, whose Odyssey in no way approximates that of his Grecian forebearer, but rather the alcoholic waywardness of a deadbeat dad whose absenteeism renders his biological offspring misguided souls who have no pedagogical influence and thus no understanding of what to do or how to do it. Add to this witch's brew the traumas induced in these same offspring through the Mr. Hyde brought out by King Alcohol, and you have an inevitably dysfunctional demographic being created through this Homer Simpson influence of the corrupt paterfamilias. Rather than conscientiously educating and instructing his biological offspring, Homer Simpson was either hypnotizing himself in pleasant abandon before the Talmud vision, or hypnotizing himself before that same mind control machine in the Jewish-run poison store called the Bar, wherein he would be encouraged in his vices by the barman who, though portrayed as a Polish Aryan, is in most cases a Jew, feeding the addiction he induces in his goyim slaves at a profit. Thus begins his downgoing and that of his dysfunctional family unit, spiraling down the drain like so much alcohol-fueled urine, flushing away the hopes and dreams of a better tomorrow for the hell of the present shunted aside through pleasant intoxicated memories of yesteryear, when it was considered socially acceptable to be an alcoholic, as a high school hero, etc. Thus the future is sacrificed on the altar of the past, and the future of the family being bound up with that of the paterfamilias. But can one entirely blame Homer Simpson for avoiding his parental responsibilities and seeking the sensationalistic entertainment, responding to the siren call of the bottle? Yes. However, in the real world at the time of this fictional portrayal of the family, the baby boomer female was a presence often serving as the ball and chain which the husband had to return to after his day's drudge, an unpleasant prospect indeed. Yet if he were a man in the Marlborough sense, he would have straightened out the crooked nature of a feminist corrupted home through assuming his proper role as the pater of the familia. Marge Simpson is the portrayal of the female who sold herself short through the nuptials instead of becoming like so many baby boomer careerists who decided to abandon their children. This insinuation that a traditional role is inferior, rendering one inadequate or merely a shadow of a person who exists as a pale reflection of the man of the house. Thus the formula for the Bart Simpson latchkey kid is generated, and a generation of parentally abandoned youth, by the father through no account deadbeat dadism, and by the mother through status seeking careerism or the perpetual dissatisfaction drilled into her subconscious mind through such media portrayals of the inadequate wife archetype. Thus Marge becomes a police officer assuming a masculine role, while Homer continues to swell his corpulent form with liquor and donuts, adopting a purely passive and sensationalistic female lifestyle. Both of these characterizations are a flagrant violation of natural law through subverting, inverting the natural role of the sexes, androgenizing the sexes, and rendering their children confused as to which behavior is appropriate for their sex and how to express it outwardly, enabling them to become functional adults capable of maintaining the integrity of the white society against the takeover by the Jews. Bart Simpson is to represent, construct, create the identity of the white boy, the reckless, unintelligent rebel without a cause who is perpetually creating trouble, legal, social, etc. He is portrayed as the quintessential no-account who skips school, and in general is the very presence of chaos in the system. Being so portrayed, the white male's inherent rebelliousness and unwillingness to conform to the system is construed as a vice when it is in reality a virtue. This is more perverting inverting of the reality for the purpose of attempting to create an anti-heroic role model for the white boys and to construct his image as a purely negative figure, a destroying force of the putative good society that constitutes Springfield, run by the Jewish mayor Joe Quimby, the archetype of Jewish mishpacha corruption. The converse is of course the historically veridical case archetype of the white male youth, defender and protector of society, hyper-intelligent creative genius and natural law-abiding agent of justice. Within the Matrix reality, the reality is inverted. A nightmarish fantasy remains, and nothing outside of it is permitted to be spoken of or acknowledged as existing. The unintelligence of Bart is eclipsed by his little sister Lisa, whose intelligence is the converse of his, that of genius level. The natural reality where males are endowed with much greater reasoning and inventive faculties is denied in the Jews' false reality they have created, portraying females as wise and all-knowing, while males are portrayed as near imbeciles incapable of knowing their own good, let alone that of society, in short to be castrated and cucked by a female, which is the prescription of the Jew world order via their programming, of which this is but one instance targeted towards G audiences, young and old. Used as a meme of the smart girl to invert the reality or at least implicitly denigrate the white male. The politically correct neuroticism of Lisa Simpson has been replicated in real life after this portrayal, has wreaked great havoc upon society, and this character is the Frankenstein's monster the Jews have created to unleash their tyranny, that of feminism and anti-white moralizing bigotry, to strike at the root of the once white society. Thus the Simpsons represent a microcosm of the macrocosm of both the Jewish brain pollution apparatus and the actual society, in the way in which these inverted roles have been drip-fed into the consciousness of the white population to accept non-white immigration, Jewish supremacism, feminism, deadbeat dadism, dropout rebelliousness, etc. A more succinct vehicle of degeneration did not exist at the time, though it was precedential in that it opened up the gates for even greater forms of vice to pour through into the consciousness of the passive spectator of the Talmud vision. Married with Children, Second Showcase and Prescription of Degeneracy. Simultaneous to The Simpsons, this sitcom served the same purpose, only to a greater extreme of vice, the characters being deliberately exaggerated from the reality as a means of distorting reality into their image, an idealistic reification of satanic archetypes, in the words of Stalin, an idealist materialist praxis which seeks to create a reality in their own image, attempting to usurp the throne of nature God and crown oneself as God of their own universe, creating a kingdom of hell upon earth. This sitcom served well that purpose, being replete with satanic symbolism and memes that ingrained themselves in the consciousness of the docile hypnotized viewers, who were rendered comatose and highly suggestible through the flicker rate of their Talmud visions. Again, as with The Simpsons, the paterfamilias is denigrated as a willless simpleton who exists purely for the sake of self-stimulation outside of his servitude towards his family, before whom he grudgingly slaves in his meaningless occupation, which, like Homer Simpson, is the denouement of their lives and destruction of their youthful idealism, namely the family structure, which is presented as a prison to which one is shackled. The castration of the paterfamilias is the surreptitious meme publicized through this vehicle of entrainment, attempting to reify the idea the king is dead and obliterate his memory, history, culture, etc. This castration procedure was effected by the usurpation of the dominant role by the female Peggy, who, unlike Marge Simpson, was more of a callous feminist black widow spider who ensnared her husband slave in the web of a prospectively comfortable home, which led to his money energy blood being drained into her shopping sprees and credit cards, the remnant being allocated towards her chillens, the latchkey kids. Thus the woman was placed on top and the man existed merely to transport her to her desired destination. The self-absorbed negligence of the wife-mother led to the unraveling of the family unit, the son being a castrated outcast and eventually a degenerate exploiter of women, the daughter being a harlot whose occupation consisted of romping around with random alpha male bad boys, both cases leading to the destruction of the nuclear family through exploitation of themselves and others, themselves being exploited through their basest drives being cultivated. Given this fragmentation process, the Bundy family holds itself together through the magic of the hyperreality of a sitcom. Translating this into real life leads simply to the degradation of the family and inevitable chaos in society, taking this as the archetype which, under the guise of humor, exists merely to reify the ideal of the Jews in their creation of a Jewish utopia through the destruction of the nuclear family. Contrast this portrayal of white families with that of Negro families in the media as a further attempt to portray that which is white in the blackest light, and to invert reality as a means of subverting it. Family Matters is a case in point, wherein the Negro youth is portrayed as a genius and the Negro police officer father, a law-abiding responsible dad who has a close-knit family unit wherein all manner of merriment ensues. Add to this mixture the Fresh Prince, wherein the black patriarch is a law-abiding judge who looks out for his people in the form of an urban youth from a broken home. The latter sitcom serves as a vehicle to inculcate the white middle America audience with a guilt trip for alleged historical events such as black slavery by white overlords and rampant black poverty in the ghetto, and enticing white youth with the urban culture to fill the vacuum of their own degraded culture with a kosher-approved substitute. Thus inversion-perversion operates at the level of the family unit, striking at the roots of society to destroy the flowering of the higher culture through this communist leveling process. Whatever influence might have existed and still exists in the mind control media, there were a few venues which slipped through the cracks as gifts from God of Providence or karmic blowbacks against the black magician Jewish elite who had taken control of the media as their machine of mind control of the populace and programming to reify their perverse ideals they seek to impose upon the fertile soil of the Aryan collective consciousness as seeds of destruction. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, standing as a literary encapsulation of the world situation his plots and characters represent, the reality that is and was faced by the Aryans against the dark forces of evil which seek their destruction. The hobbits are the little people, the common mass who lives their lives oblivious to the surrounding world, who are capable of attaining the higher consciousness and overcoming the pettiness of the daily drudge. They are weighted down by the leaden chain of materiality, drawn to the mundane cares of the world, ensconced in the veil of Maya. However, their leadership constitutes the new hope for evolutionary development to become like the elves and sojourn over the sea towards the higher states of being through the alchemical process and an acquaintance with good and evil on a quest to attain enlightenment. Instigated from their dogmatic slumber of ignorant bickering and worldly care in the Shire by the dwarves, the initiation begins transmitting itself generationally within the family of the elite, who are burdened with the responsibility of gnosis and who must develop this gnosis to serve the good instead of evil, like Gandalf instead of Saruman, white as opposed to black magic, service to others as opposed to service to self. The former also endures the quest for eternity through overcoming his lower self and developing the diamond body, in contrast to the coat of many colors of Saruman, black magician, who hides his true purposes behind the white hand and who serves the dark power in Mordor, god of the Jews. The orc hordes are unleashed against the little people and even the Ainhoa, Viras of Rohan and Gondor, who constitute the tribe of Judah from Tolkien's perspective, defenders of Middle-earth. These animal beast hordes are the slaves of both Saruman and Sauron, servants of the Judeo-Masonic Pact for Global Dominion. In the Citadel of Technocracy of Orthanc, the Metropolis Prison of Jog, these beast people are perversely hybridized through technological gene splicing with the men, creating beastman monstrosities to serve the Jog as more intelligent and unfeeling slaves than the orcs, yet divested of their identity and moral sense, malleable puppets of their masters molded to suit their agenda of earth devastation and totalitarian control, slave soldiers in the wars against Middle-earth. Through the heroism of the Aryan race, the evil of the world is negated once it is struck at its heart, through Orthanc being destroyed by the Ents smashing the technocalypse of the metropolis. The Shire had been flooded with the orc hordes, who were then rooted out by the now fully aware denizens of the Shire, the o-consciousness of the Aryan collective soul, its foundation in the peasantry who had not attained adeptship and initiated the change of the tide to cleanse the land for themselves and their posterity. Given that this is almost inevitably what must result, the story of Tolkien is a revelation of the method prognosticative of the destiny of the Aryan and of his foe, the Dark Lord. He-Man, Master of the Universe, another leak in the Matrix, comes in the form of what presumably is a Gnostic offering, an insight into the future possibility of what is to come after the conflagration between the Aryan He-Man and the leader of the Dark Forces, Skeletor the Jew, namely total victory for the Eternian, the Aryan race who alone are capable of attaining eternity through cultivating the power of Grayskull and ascending beyond the material plane. Thereby they attain eternity and thus are called Eternians. He-Man, the blond-haired, blue-eyed, ruddy-skinned Aryan man who crusades for the survival of the little people who live outside of Eternia and who are constantly beset by the machinations of the evil Skeletor and his evil horde. He-Man's name is Prince Adam, connotative of Adamic man, the Aryan race who are of God, not part of the creation of God, and who thereby are masters of the universe, not subject to dissipation and absorption into the demiurge as energetic food. Skeletor, the minion of this demiurgic force and through whom it manifests itself on the mundane plane, forms Snake Mountain as opposed to the white magic benevolence of Grayskull, both of which are energy flowing along the Shashamna upward towards the higher realms and eternity, in the case of Snake Mountain downwards and onto the earth. Perhaps, however, both paths lead to eternity? but only how they are used and directed. Skeletor, the Jew wearing the colors of the Demiurge, those of the night side of Eden, is equipped with great knowledge as evinced by his plotting and cunning manipulation, pure intellect, left brain robot thought, logic and entropic cogitation, nevertheless lacking in wisdom as operating on a wavelength not in harmony with the sum total, devoted purely to egoic pursuits and thus doomed to failure from the outset, whereas in the case of He-Man he is the white mage who resonates with the sum total and through a heightened intuition and understanding can easily circumvent the plans of the Jew Skeletor, whose magic is rooted in a perverse twisting of the order of things to serve his own megalomaniacal plans for conquest of the earthly plane and Eternia, a realm he is incapable of attaining. Sorceress is the bearer of intuition, which is the seat of wisdom in Castle Grayskull, whereas her counterpart in the Evil Horde is Evil-Lyn, who represents the sacred feminine intuition in its lowest octave as a black magic manipulation so prevalent in the discipline of psychology that power source which modern feminists plug themselves into as means of self-empowerment, which always entails a relative decrease in the power of others from whom this power is taken and over whom it is wielded. The nanny state of today is represented by this other subjection by the feminine ego in its lowest octave. Sorceress resonates with the sum total, Evil-Lyn runs against the grain for purely self-serving ends. Beast-Man with his feral strength is the Inaush of the Bible, the pre-Adamites who are part of the creation and incapable of transcending the material plane, where they remain as an earthbound soul if not absorbed into the Demiurge as energetic food. His counterparts would be Randman and Man-at-Arms, whose technological weaponry easily supersedes Beast-Man and the Evil Horde. However, this technology, itself a neutral force used for either good or evil, can be easily turned towards the source of evil, and this is entrusted to the engineer Man-at-Arms, whose Aryan soul employs the technology for good. Both allegories of justice and of injustice are discoverable in countless forms in the pop culture, even though the good is overshadowed by the surfeit of evil which pervades the pop cultural landscape. In spite of the degradation of the family and thereby the Aryan race in general by this mind control, good always finds a way to overcome evil, justice to rectify injustice. In the fantasy world of pop culture, so too in the real world of politics at a micro and macro level, the evil of the earth, the Dark Lord, is subjugated by the Children of Light, the Aryan race. The predictive programming of the Jewish mind manipulators is revealed to the Aryans, who the Jews contemptuously look upon as their goyim slaves, as a means of conditioning them to adopt self-destructive behaviors leading towards the Jews' intended genocide of the white race. The Aryan backlash in the form of such works as Tolkien, Jim Henson's The Dark Crystal and the cartoon He-Man illustrate the struggle between the forces of light against the forces of darkness, between the Aryan who upholds the order of God and the Jew who seeks its destruction through chaos. Learning the lesson of what the Jew wants the Aryan to do via predictive programming is essential to combating the genocide agenda.